There are plenty of films and shows about fierce competitors walking the line between commitment and self-destruction. They usually play baseball or football or hockey. The new Netflix series, The Queen's Gambit, finds its story in the equally intense, if less obviously bruising, world of competitive chess. Based on a 1983 novel, it stars Anya Taylor-Joy as a young woman whose brilliance at chess is threatened by trauma and addiction as she goes from child prodigy to international star. We've got a very special, and I do mean very special, chess champion with us. I'm Linda Holmes. We're going to be talking about the Netflix miniseries The Queen's Gambit on this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. Welcome to banking reimagined. Capital One checking and savings accounts have no fees or minimums and a top-rated banking app that lets you manage your money anytime, anywhere. Check on the account balance, deposit checks, pay bills, and transfer money on the go. This is banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One N.A., member FDIC.
Welcome back. Here with me from her home in Brooklyn is Linda Diaz. She is a musician and the winner of this year's Tiny Desk Contest. She's also an international chess champion and a chess expert, which is an official rating. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Linda. Thanks for having me.
I do want to clarify for people, how good are you at chess?
Oh, my goodness. Well, now I'm not as good as I used to be, but at my peak, I was an expert. I played for 13 years ever since I was 6 till professionally until I was 17 and then through college just like for fun. But it was the passion that I pursued for the majority of my life.
Wow. So we invited you here to talk about The Queen's Gambit. As I said, it is a Netflix 10-episode series. It is now available as you listen to this episode. It concerns a young woman. Her name is Beth. She is an orphan, and at the orphanage that she winds up in, she's kind of revealed as a great chess player from a very early age, gradually rises through the ranks, becomes an international player. And at the same time, she is also struggling with addiction and some other problems. Obviously, that is the kind of the drama side of the drama. So what did you think? How did you like it?
I loved it. I watched the whole thing in 2 days.
Wow. Did it feel like a respectful chess series?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of chess players will see themselves in it and be really interested by it. And they play chess correctly in the series, which is like... Number one, I know it sounds like such a simple thing, and of course they would have to in a show about chess, but so often chess is played so incorrectly on screen.
Incorrectly in what way? What kinds of incorrect chess do you see?
It is like disrespectful. It is like pieces set up incorrectly on the opposite side of the board, like missing pieces, moving ways that you just can't move.
Oh.
People moving twice in a row, just taking things they can't take.
Yeah, you shouldn't. I would think you would not actually need a consultant for that. People should be able to find out.
Yeah.
In this age of research,
yes.
How you set up the pieces on a chessboard. One of the things that I thought was interesting about it is you start with this character, Beth, who is played by Anya Taylor-Joy. And when she's a very young child, she kind of comes across an old man who works in her in the orphanage where she's living. And he's playing chess in kind of the basement. He's a custodian. And when she sees him and she sees the chessboard, she just kind of fastens on to this idea of chess, and it fascinates her and she wants to know more about it. Does that part ring true to you, given your experience with a lot of younger kids who are playing chess?
Oh, definitely. I think a lot of children's experiences, first experiences, start with a mentor. So like their parents or their older siblings or a coach. And I think that is what Beth had, even though it wasn't necessarily called that by name. That was like her first coach. Sometimes, especially for young girls who are like discouraged from playing chess, I think it really does take someone seeing something in you and motivating you to work harder and be your best. And so that definitely happened to me at a young age. I had a good disposition to play chess, is what my coaches said. I was really quiet and I could sit for a long period of time, and I was like 6 years old, so that was a big deal. And I was the worst chess player on the chess team, like until fourth grade, from kindergarten to fourth grade, which is a long time. And they were like, stick with it, keep her in the game. And then in fourth grade, I just like blossomed. I won like a bunch of, I won cities. I got second in state, and then I won super nationals all in a row. And that, like, launched my whole chess career. And that just took, you know, people really believing in me and motivating me. So, yeah, I think it's incredibly realistic. I really did relate to that relationship that she had with her coach and the custodian.
Yeah, they do spend a decent amount of time in the show talking about the fact that, and this was, you know, the 1950s, so I assume maybe even more so then, but the fact that she is a girl and that a lot of the important chess players around her and who she's meeting are boys and then men. What was your experience of being a young girl playing chess with, you know, in that world that didn't necessarily offer you as many maybe women and girls to relate to?
I will say in the 50s, in a lot of countries, including Russia, I believe, and they mentioned this in the show, women were not even allowed to play men. And before that, women were not allowed to play chess at all. Like, they weren't allowed to be taught chess, they weren't allowed to play in tournaments. So I think they said in the show the women's champion at the time had never played a man in chess, and that's kind of wild. And so I was born in the 90s, like, was starting to play in the early 2000s, and there were a lot of initiatives, chess initiatives started for girls, just to motivate them to play, to like have representation, to see that there aren't so few of us. There's this idea that like there are just no girls doing it, and it's like there are a lot of girls actually interested in this, and so we want to bring them all together and kind of have a community for that. So, but I will say, in terms of the show and Beth's experience, a lot of that was similar to me, and even worse in some ways. Like, I think the show definitely gets it right that she is critiqued for having these traits about her that men have and are praised for. So she plays the Sicilian. I also used to play the Sicilian. She's an intuitive thinker. I also am an intuitive thinker. And she's really aggressive. And I was also an aggressive player. And so it comes off as you're impatient. And really, it's like you're creative and you're naturally gifted. And so I really saw that in her. I had a lot of people say, you know, you need to study your openings. You need to study your end games. You need to do X, Y, Z, which like I probably should have also done. But I did have these gifts that it really took specific people to nurture those gifts in me. And I will say, in terms of her friendships with boys and then men in the show, I definitely have a lot of guy friends, obviously, from chess. However, my experience was just like being completely sexualized, you know, like not really respected as a person, even if I was respected by as a player in some ways. I was oftentimes the youngest person in a lot of these rooms. You know, I would travel internationally, and grown adult men, sometimes with intention, sometimes just of ignorance, not knowing how old I was, depending on the age, you know, would just be incredibly inappropriate to me in many ways, like make me feel stupid, make me feel small, emotionally manipulate me. And I think a lot of women have this same experience. And so it was cool in the show to see Beth be this, like, you know, very smart, very on it, having friends and who are kind of looking out for her. There's a couple points in the show where she is like, you know, kind of navigating that emotional manipulation. But I think that is like a huge, especially in a sport where like it's such an emotional and psychological sport. It's the people that are attracted to it are unfortunately on the flip side. Some of those people who are just like very emotionally manipulative. Is that the wrong word? Yeah, it was a difficult experience growing up.
You know, they spend a good amount of time in the show on the fact that Beth, because she grew up in this facility where she was given tranquilizers as a very young kid, is struggling with addiction throughout, and it's somewhat at odds with her efforts to be successful. Do you think the portrayal of kind of addiction and kind of personal struggle within chess, did that seem right?
Definitely. I think especially if you're a genius at anything, there are all these lines that kind of like glorify it in the show, like genius and madness, you know, go hand in hand. But A, I really believe that's true. You know, people whose brains think differently are often wired a little bit differently. And they're often, if you're very emotional, then you're susceptible to certain things. Or if you're obsessed with a game, you usually have an addictive personality to go along with it. So yeah, substance abuse was really common in chess, especially because a lot of the culture, it being so male dominated and also it being, you know, part of many of individual countries' cultures, like drinking is huge in some tournaments. You can even drink at the board when you're younger and you're around adults who like, you know, can drink and have, and it's not really an issue. That's alcoholism is like a big issue for chess players, but also, you know, a lot of chess players are on prescribed substances for whatever reason. And so it's really easy to fall into addiction that way. You're playing 8-hour games and then waking up in the morning and doing the same thing. So some people, it's just like you know, self-medication. And so in my experience, the majority of the talented chess players that I know also struggled with substance abuse, if not being addicted to something. And then again, if you're not addicted to a substance, there's also just the addiction to the game and how much of your life that takes up. And obviously, I think it's like dramatized again, but I think it's really true, but I just don't think it's realistic that she is the only one dealing with that.
You know, one of the things I think is so interesting is that I think trying to dramatize, you know, when you talk about dramatizing, not just the lives of the people, but also the game itself, there's a visual trick they have where she tends to kind of see the pieces on the ceiling. She tends to kind of see them sort of reflected on the ceiling, even when she's not playing. Like, she can lie in bed and look at the ceiling. When you see kind of that depiction, does that seem, you know, yes, that's kind of what it feels like to think about chess, or less so? What did you think?
I think it's different for everybody. I'm an audio like learner, definitely, but a lot of chess players are visual, especially because like one of the biggest aspects of chess is space. There's like space and time and then your position and things. So any chess player that's going to be on any kind of like expert professional level has to be able to visualize the board. But for me, I don't know. I guess it's second nature. Like, it's kind of like translating, you know. For me, it feels like, and I'm bilingual in Spanish, you know, I'm thinking something in English, maybe that's my primary language, but then it's easily translated in Spanish. That's kind of the way that it feels like with chess for me. Like, okay, I'm sitting and looking at a position and I see all of these permutations, and the thing that I visualize isn't like a totally different, you know, on the ceiling board that like comes and speaks to me or anything, but it is, it's a similar concept. I just don't think it's like so visually apparent to me because it's like second nature.
Yeah. Well, as I said, I think it's really, really hard to convey what chess feels like to people who are playing it because it is so internal. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons why for me, I got kind of bogged down in the parts of the show that were sort of watching a competition and then watching another competition and watching a different competition. Because to me, I'm just watching somebody kind of wrinkle their brow and look like they're concentrating. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a lot to kind of grab onto. So for me, it dragged in the middle for me, I think, a little bit. And I think this is part of the reason. I think a lot of times when you make a show or a film about somebody's passion, it's easier to lock into the emotional elements of it. If you understand, you don't necessarily have to have that passion, but if you understand it.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, what other things do you think are kind of askew in the general kind of cultural understanding of chess and people who play chess?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that you think that it dragged on a little bit, because for me, I was like, this is way too fast.
Of course.
I'm like, there's no chess play game that's ever played this fast. And I think that the things that they did a really good job with, you know, the idea that you memorize moves and you look over your opponent's games before you go and play the game against them is, like, very true. I also think, like, part of the dramatization of her being a prodigy is that, like, you know, she doesn't really study that much and, like, whatever. But in reality, for someone to be world champion, you would have had to have been studying 8 hours a day since you met expert level, which is partially why I stopped playing chess, because I was like, I don't have the time or the want to devote myself to chess for 8 hours a day and have multiple coaches in multiple countries and, you know. I think that it was very true in the actual mechanical, like, there is an opening, there is an end game. You have to, like, learn all of this information and put into practice. You definitely work with your team. And I think at that point in the 50s, the Russians, you know, chess has always been a part of their culture, whereas American culture, it was kind of slower to start as a respected, like, sport. And I also think something that was, like, pretty well portrayed is, like, the way that chess was fanatic. It still kind of is, you know, there's like live streaming chess and there's like a whole Twitch world now. But back then, like that, those scenes of the little boy running out to the crowd outside to tell them what move she played. And then there's like the demonstration board. That's like all real. I used to play in tournaments in other countries. I played in a tournament in Biel and there was like the best chess players in the world playing on a stage. And then like all us little like people who paid to be in the tournament, you know, like playing below them. And so when I'd be done with my game, I would go and watch the super amazing chess players, but you can't like stand next to the world champion. You can't just like go up behind his game in the way that you can go up behind your friend's game. So they would have giant demonstration boards. You're not allowed to say anything in the room. And then they would have them like on a projector outside of the room for people to watch. And then you can like, you know, comment in real time. So I think all of those and also just the discipline that it takes and the kind of brains that are attracted to chess, like, and the love of chess that you really need to be a part of it. Like, Beth has a relationship with her, like, coach who coached her for a little bit. And he's like, you love chess so much, and I realize I don't love it that much, and I'm kind of going to pack it up. That literally happened to me with so many of my friends. I was like, I don't think that's how you should choose your passions. But at a young age, 17, I was like, you know what? I'm just not this invested. I see my close people in my life being this invested, and I'm not. And just like with music, I think, or with anything, you know, you don't have to make it your career to love it, to be a chess player, to be a musician, whatever. But to make it at a certain level, it's just like so much dedication and intentionality. It's not just going to like happen because you're talented.
Yeah. I do want to ask you a little bit about music before we let you go. Do you think there's a connection between you as a good chess player and you as a musician? Do you think those things connect?
125%. Well, it's not always. There's many ways to be a good musician, many ways to be a good chess player. The more I talk about chess and the more I talk about music, you know, I'm realizing that I think of them the same way. So with chess, you know, you're like focused on either attack or like a part of your board. And that's kind of the same way that I do it with music. And I think all of that comes into play with just like having, for me, having an intuitive mind, which means like, okay, going through permutations, like different options very quickly, but also being like, okay, if this, then it has to be this, which is kind of how the main character plays in chess. You know, like she's more like she's like, I didn't make any mistakes. And these days there's like computers that can tell you you didn't make any mistakes, whatever. But back then there wasn't. The same thing with music. There's no computer that tells you that was the wrong note. You know, there's music theory that can say like that note doesn't fit in the chord. But at the end of the day, like the way that I run through melodies is just like what feels right, what sounds right. And when I write a song, I'm like, that was right. Like, there was no other way to write it. There was no other option. I'm, like, 100% sure that that's the way that it was. And it's kind of the same way of being an intuitive chess player. So I learned a lot from chess, as I said, about the intentionality that you need to succeed in something that you love. And I'm really lucky to have been naturally gifted at chess and naturally gifted as a musician. So both chess and music are things that you can get better at just by practicing. But I learned from chess that even if you are the cream of the crop, whatever, you can't get by without practicing and keeping your mind sharp. And it's all so much muscle memory. And the same thing is true, especially of being a singer. You know, it's muscle memory.
Right. Absolutely. Well, we want to know what you think about the Queen's Gambit. You can find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. You can listen to Linda's new single, Good Thing, wherever you get your music. Linda, thank you so much for being here. This was so much fun.
Thank you. Yes, it was great.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second, subscribe to our newsletter. It's over at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all tomorrow.
The news moves fast. Listen to the NPR News Now podcast to keep up. We update stories as they evolve every hour. So no matter when you listen, you get the news as close to live as possible on your schedule. Subscribe to or follow the NPR News Now podcast.